This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast. Chilled Samples Podcast, bringing to you all a very special triple episode. In the studio today, I have the one and only Hoffy Beats and the one and only UKDD. What's going on, fellas?
Woo!
What's up?
What's up?
How y'all doing, guys?
Great.
doing great.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us. Both of us.
Yes, of course, guys. Of course. You both know that I love having conversations with both of you. So I'm excited to have a triple podcast. And just like we were talking before we hit record, we might have some bullets that we cover, but we might also not hit any of them. And we'll see where this podcast takes us. So I'll pass it over to you guys. Whoever wants to take it first. Maybe what are some plans that you guys have strategically going into this next year, maybe with based on some knowledge and experience you've gained over the past year?
All right, let me grab it. I think my plan going from here, I've had a lot of success the past couple of months doing indie releases. I've been experimenting a lot with that. Since labels they do take quite a big cut, and if you know the big playlists on Spotify, if you land on those, it's not always because of the labels. So you could potentially be wasting that revenue if you release with a label that doesn't really help you get as many streams. Going forward, I think I'll be doing a lot more self-released stuff with obviously a bunch of collaborators, but that's the strategy going now. Yeah,
I was just pointing for everyone just listening to me and Cody. So that's basically it. No, I completely agree. Like I did. If we're looking at the past 3 years, I would say that my strategy in the first two was to sort of make connections with labels, because I did think that it was the best way for me to get my music out to everyone as possible. And don't take me the wrong way, I do like working with many of those labels, although I did have some bad experiences, but I'd rather not speak about them. But I agree with him. I can use me and Hoffy as an example, me and Jonas. But basically, we had a couple of, since December, we had a couple of releases coming out. And I'm not trying to bash anyone, but like the best sort of reward we got was when we released full indie. Like we did with Smokey and with the last track we released. Then we even got another one this Friday that I'm pretty sure it's going to have very... it's going to be well received. So I'm with him. 100%. And I'll have to say that it's wonderful to be able to work with... still keep collaborating with everyone. And just be able to say, no, dude, we can do it by ourselves. We don't need anybody else. And let our names give the weight to our music. Like, that's not just be just attached to this label, which, dude, if you want to do that, it's not bad. It's good. Just, this is my way of seeing things. And honestly, I think Jonas helped me, got me into this whole mentality. We were speaking about it a couple of weeks ago. And it, I think we were pretty much like having telepathy thoughts or something like that. It was, it was funny. It was quite funny.
Yeah. Well, and I, it, for anyone that has released an independent track, the revenue is significantly more if it does land on a Spotify editorial. So I guess my follow-up question is, what is, so here's my assumption with independent releases, plan A is fingers crossed landing on an editorial. Now, if your track doesn't land on an editorial, what's plan B to ensure that that track gets listened to and accumulate streams?
Well, first of all, the quality of the music is a huge factor. So
that's
so
number one.
So you gotta have quality music in order to first of all land the placements and to get people listening. But yeah, you don't always get the placements, even though you think this is your greatest track ever. So I think the strategy that I had before was to connect with as many curators on SubmitHub and stuff like that. But yeah, but I haven't really had any substantial success with that. Actually, yeah. It's been very, very, very minimal. So I think if your track doesn't land on an editorial, it's about building up your organic following on Instagram, on Spotify, on social media, even doing Facebook ads, driving the revenue from your streams into ads, into more attention to your music, which will then grow your follow base exponentially, and that will result in more streams. Yeah, it's not a tactic I've done myself, but I've seen a lot of successful stories utilizing that strategy.
I completely agree, dude. I would have to, picking up on what you're saying, like the whole social media presence and everything. Like, I did hear a lot of people online speaking that the community we are, it's basically producers, follower producers, which is sort of truth, but let's be honest, we're all pretty much excited to hear what our fellow musicians are doing. It's basically it. Like, we're all hyping up each other. And that little group that's not doing it, it's basically the ones that say bad about it. But I do agree, like, what Jonah's been doing with little snippets of the crazy-ass machines he's been getting. And picking up on the revenue stuff, dude, don't ever, everyone listening, we're not thinking about growing our bank accounts per se. We're basically thinking about reinvesting everything. Like, everything we got, it's basically put into the music. Whether it's instruments or little shits, like you can just do some effects, like pedals, everything else. Like, and the other thing, it's the Facebook ads part of it. I do agree it's a very good choice. And it's a great way for us to sort of take back some of the opportunity of being ourselves, like our owners of our own music, our own traffic, and create a bigger, let's say, platform, but I would have to say fan base. It's more suitable, because you can also direct those Facebook ads for your page per se as an artist, or you can simply do it for your playlist, which, as Jonas said, I've seen a lot of people getting great success with that. Like, it's just simply owning, it's the same thing as owning your masters. You're simply, now the strategy, it's owning your streams, like being able to sort of reinvest everything in your business, which is what every micro company is doing right now. So it makes perfect sense. I do think there's no better way for us to sort of travel around these music business things than just actually invest in the opportunities for us to keep indie as indie as possible, because that's the way we're going, dude. And that's how we're going to have like 3,000 or 4,000 independent artists like doing the things they love and just keep supporting each other. I don't have other words to describe it, honestly. It's I'm still in all of this. It's wonderful.
Yeah, well, and I love what you guys are talking about in regards to kind of analyzing our current follower base. And the podcast is a great example. A majority of listeners are other producers within our scene that want to hear individuals that they look up to, or even their own friends hear what they have to say. So what is some tactics that you guys have either been implementing or are thinking about implementing in taking the passive listeners of our music, of our genre, and turning them into active and engaged fans?
Let me go first. I would agree with what Offie what Jonas was saying before. Like, you do have to invest a lot of time on social media content and everything, because that's the more straightforward way for us to get a big fan base, a big engaging fan base. Although I think this is sort of experimental from our point of view, because when you see big artist page, big artist social media, one of every two of them do not manage their own account. They do not keep doing it. They're not the ones doing it. Mm-hmm. They can be, they're signed to some label which has a PR company that sort of takes care of everything. So you can never expect as much content per se, although there's some people who actually are out of this rule, like my friend over here, right? Like Jonas just keeps pumping content out. But like, when you're not as organized as he is, which is my case, you sort of lack in this sort of content. So you need to get, you either try to get someone who can keep you in line, which is sort of what I'm trying to do. I've been trying to get someone who knows a bit more about marketing, can sort of give me some guidelines, help me with all the ads, with all the way I should develop content, which is the best way to deliver it, and how can you keep yourself engaged with fans. I think you can sort of, there's a couple of routes you can go, but there's the right way to do it, and there's the wrong way to do it. Although I don't think we should touch on it here. We should speak about it outside of the podcast. But yeah.
Yeah, so let me touch on that a bit, because yeah, content is definitely crucial to sharing your process as an artist. But yeah, that content has to provide some kind of value. For me, I try to share small snippets of new tracks I've done, small remix kind of things where I would upload some stems and other producers can download those stems and remix it, and now with the Instagram algorithm, it's 100% worth it to really get into reels at this mm-hmm. point. It's there is a lot of organic reach going on there, but yeah, obviously you got to have some kind of quality to your content, but yeah, don't sweat it if you can't make the best. It's all about just making something. Just like with music, it's all about if you can spend 5 minutes doing a piece of content, well, you're way better off than spending 0 minutes doing content, and maybe you'll reach 5 more people today, and in 5 years that will be 5,000 or 10,000 people. So you gotta grow it from scratch and gradually build it up with the time you have available and with the energy you have available to put into it. So I think that's a very important point. It doesn't come overnight.
Yeah, such a phenomenal point. And it can feel like it's a blessing and a curse in regards to social media marketing, because we do have such a phenomenal tool to be able to share our stories and to share our content. But there is also the detraction from the creation process itself in regards to making music, because you do have to invest time in the content creation. And that's, for me, over the years, it's the most important aspect has been figuring out what pieces of content I enjoy creating while simultaneously combining things that I believe are productive and turning that into content. So luckily with the podcast, every episode is anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour piece of content, which is great. That's a and then of course I can chop these videos or audio clips out into smaller clips that I can then repost on social media, which I of course could be better at, and that's something that I continuously procrastinate on, just because I really don't enjoy video editing that much, even though I'm not even editing, I'm just chopping out clips. Dude, but
you got an excuse, man. You just don't stop. Like, you wake up at 4 a.m. and you just, it's weird. It's insane. Every single time we speak, I tell you this, like, sometimes I just see you like in the middle of nowhere and it's like 3:30 and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like,
yeah, is it
you've got some messages from me, yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. Like that.
Is it productivity or insomnia? You guys be the judge then. but yeah, well, and so even so what I do for content creation, really specifically for Instagram, I rotate through three different types of content. So I have my nature pictures, where I'm taking a picture of my Zoom recorder when I'm out on adventures. And so for me, I'm infusing the sample creation process, I'm infusing adventures or trail running along with content creation. So that's kind of what I'll call one of my bread and butter pieces of content, because it's easy for me to take out my GoPro and to take a picture when I'm in such beautiful landscape and I have my microphone with me. Similarly, so the next one, so I have three pieces of content that I rotate through. So first being the nature pictures, the second being either a video that I just take quickly, which I've over the past like month or 2 months, I've been doing more recently because they're super easy. And I can typically just do one take, post it, boom, we're good to go. And that's typically promoting a new podcast that's coming out. Or I take a clip from one of the episodes. And then, of course, the third piece of content is the morning mixes, where I just go through my network, like individuals like yourself, and I just repost a video of you guys creating music. And that's a morning mix. And so for me, this allows me to not even necessarily have to plan out my content in advance, because I just go through the cycle of those three posts. So I can, as soon as it's time to post, I can just pull out my phone, look chronologically on my profile and be like, oh, okay, today's a morning mix. And then I post a morning mix, which has been nice. But for you guys, do you plan ahead on the content that you're posting or that you're thinking about, or do you kind of just create and post on the fly?
Well, for me, it's usually not a question of creating content. It's about documenting the process of making music. So that way you remove that the creation process of the content, and you can focus on your craft. You can focus on making music, and then just document whatever you're doing that day, and that usually makes the best kind of content, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's so I would say, what's the word to describe it? Oh God, sorry, Siri just went crazy. I'm sorry. No, I would agree with you. I would say as organic as it seems, it's the best way. I don't know. You guys probably follow. I know you follow it, Jonas. You follow them. But the Count and Kyle Ennis, you know, Cody? Yeah. You know the guys? Yeah, yep. I think I caught Kyle Ennis and the Count speaking about it in a live thing. And they told everyone that's like, they don't use pro gear when it comes to recording. They don't make the beat and then lay the videos. No, they just put the phone recording. When what comes out, and they just simply chop up the small bits and it's done. Like that's the way I'm trying to, although I've been not releasing, I tried to release a couple of things working around in the studio a couple of months ago, and I stopped because I wasn't doing that. I was sort of setting up everything after I recorded. I tried a couple of lines of the guitars. I was able to do that. But like things when it involves mics, it's very hard to get everything synced up. And I was struggling with that. So just getting everything ready to go, I've been able to do that. And now I think I'll be able to come back with a couple more videos and sort of grow my not network, but fan base. Let's call it that way. And I agree, as organic as possible, as quick as possible, like just do sketches, a couple of sketches of what we're working on. Like I'm pretty sure that Jonas has like a weird amount of sketches he does a day, because whenever he sends me stuff, it's like in bundles. It's not one track. It's like, okay, he goes like three tracks I made in 5 minutes. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
I love what you guys said about documenting the journey and documenting the process and trying to.
Sorry, dude. Sorry, Cody. Yeah. That's exactly what you're doing with the whole community. With this, the podcast, I wanted to sort of slash you in the middle of a sentence back then when we were telling about it. But you are working sort of now to a couple of your fan base, I would guess, because I do not know, that most of them are producers. Mm-hmm. But I do think that what you're doing is documenting everything within this genre, which wasn't being done at all. I think the only thing that was mentioning this genre was people criticizing it and sort of, oh, dude, it's true, bashing it and just trying to. I don't think they're sort of thinking about the artists themselves, because they do see a couple of labels which are on top. And they criticize that, and everyone just gets dragged into it. So it's you're documenting. Sorry.
Yeah, dude, Well, thanks, man. And it's I've said it a lot of times before, and I'll continue to say it. This the podcast has truly turned into one of my my favorite and most important projects. And I didn't necessarily intend for it to be that way, because truly, when I first entered the lo-fi chill beats community, I would try and look up interviews of artists that I enjoyed, artists that I looked up to, and I couldn't maybe I would find a written interview, like call and response interview, but I couldn't find any audio interviews or video interviews. And so it was kind of selfish of like, well, if nobody's talking to them, I'll talk to them. And then, of course, it evolved to my appreciation for what all of the artists in this scene are doing. Because from an external perspective, I guess I see the criticisms from other individuals. But rather than focusing on criticisms, I would much rather celebrate the successes and the true impact that we're having. And it truly blew me away that I couldn't, if somebody had, let's say, a 1 million monthly listeners or even 500,000 monthly listeners, and I can't find an interview, I was flabbergasted of like, what? this artist is reaching so many people with their art and their music, and nobody's wanting to talk to them. I feel like the world is missing out on hearing those stories and those artistic perspectives. And so, of course, both of you guys were, I think you both were in the first 15 episodes when I first launched. And once again, it's just turned into just a truly enjoyable project. But
a monster in a good way.
Yeah,
a monster.
Yeah. A monster in a good way for sure. And I'm glad other individuals within our scene are benefiting from these conversations. And similar to what we were talking about earlier, I would love to have active fans and engaged fans also become interested in these conversations, which of course will be a byproduct of everybody growing their individual projects and creating those active and engaged fans. And along those same lines, what are you guys kind of anticipating or hoping for in regards to your independent project growth as Hoffy Beats, as UKDD? Because for me, still being involved in playing shows within the electronic world, I view these artistic paths as separate, right? I have the avenue where I go out and I play dubstep shows and I have that live element. And so for me, it's growing the podcast.
You should view it as the same way as you view the dubstep thing. I do think I was going to speak about it if I was able to.
Yeah.
But I've been with my friend, with my supposedly the label friend, which built Lodge Records, and me, Afonso. We're trying to get a couple of places for us to start doing live shows. Not just DJ sets, but like some sort of a set date every week, preferably in the summer, to get either jams going or some sort of a live act of someone. And since I'm sorry to get you out of this conversation, Cody, but like, or we're gonna try to bring like European people over here because it's fucking cheap to pay a flight. And I'm sure that everyone, firstly, not a lot of people know Portugal as a whole, much less like Porto, my city. They usually go, no, Lisbon. Of course, Jonas, it's always outside of this box because his parents know Porto. He's a big Porto wine fan, so already knows the city. But it will be wonderful to be able to not only meet in person with a lot of these people, but also be able to show them my city and provide them like a live act. I'm not saying I'm going to pay you $3,000 for each one of them, but it's the experience, dude. You know, it's like we're just trying to bring light to this. And I'm sure that the first people doing it, if they do it correctly, we will be able to create a couple of new events within the music genre for all these things. Because it's just a matter of trying. If we don't do it, we can't sort of skip that barrier because we need to create something outside of the streaming services for us to not only be able to go around and show our music, but also have fun, dude. Like, live acts are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, I saw your face too, Jonas, the last live act you did. You were enjoying it, man. Yeah, you were really enjoying it.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to doing a bunch of concerts this year. Actually, I have a concert in Copenhagen this month, and a local ensemble with brass players reached out to me a month ago to do a collaborative concert. Wow. With live brass and beats and improvisation. And yeah, so I'll be doing three concerts within that concept in the local area, and hopefully a ton of concerts with the Hoffy project, because I've seen a lot of interest in lo-fi beats for venues and hopefully for festivals for this summer. I've been speaking a lot with some people about it, and fingers crossed. Let's hope I'll be making a lo-fi lounge at a festival this year. Who knows?
There's a lot of, I think you might have the same experience as I do when it comes to talking with these people. They sort of don't know how we translate the things. Like, they're not 100% sure how we could bring the whole, I hate calling it lo-fi beats, but like our thing to the live act stuff. Like, I think you're a great example because you're a true pianist and you're a true musician. So you do know your way around the keys, so you could give a very good show to all of them. But like, there's some artists, me myself included, like if you brought a piano out to me in the middle for a live act, dude, I would just, where are the cars, bro? I need my strings. Where the fuck are they? Like, I have no idea how to work around this. Like, I'm sort of dabbling around it. Like, I think we spoke about this, Cody, last time. Like, I read the piano the same way I read the guitar. Like, I'll go, I either find the notes or I sound fucked. So it's quite funny. I do think that this will have to be a project, especially for people with which are on my sort of side, which is it needs to be a collaborative thing. You cannot go alone, because you and an SP, I've done that with an SP404. It's not the same thing. You're sort of DJing. It's not a live act. So I would completely agree with Jonas when it comes to this. Like, we do need to find a way to translate this to a live act as true as possible and include every single way of getting live instruments within the whole thing, because I do think people will see the appeal of it. And it's a matter of time, in my opinion.
Man, well, and I've heard so much buzz about the potential for live shows coming from, of course, Jonas. We talked about the, I think in our last episode or two episodes ago, we were talking about the possibility for lo-fi lounges at music festivals, even at rock festivals, or I think especially electronic music, for the individuals that go a little hard.
Sorry, just let me stop you there, Cody. Do you have rock festivals in the US? Like, simply rock festivals?
Yeah.
Okay, that's funny. That doesn't happen here.
Oh, no?
It used to happen. Like, you do have, like, a metal fest. Like, it's that's normal. But, like, we used to have a circuit of very big festivals, and they're all just playing the main genre, which is hip-hop.
Yeah.
Like, you got a couple of rock bands on the second stage. I was going to ask you that, Jonas. What's the main genre in Denmark? What would you guess? What would your guess be?
Well, I think there is a pretty wide audience for live shows. There's interest in a lot of different things. I'm not really up to speed on that at this time, because, you know, I haven't really been to a lot of concerts the past couple of years. So I'm not really sure where we're at right now. But,
well, why not? No.
Just kidding. Is it because of COVID? Yeah. Oh my god!
It,
like, are you gonna have festivals in the US right now?
Oh,
or
yeah,
are they completely canceled?
Yeah, they're going on. Yeah, it's
in Denmark too.
Yeah, yeah,
dude, I haven't heard shit here. Shit, like, people they haven't said anything. Like, I don't know if you've heard about the Spanish that Spanish festival that goes on in Barcelona and in Porto, which is the Primavera Sound. I don't know if you've heard of it. No, you haven't. So it's basically, it's a big festival / design festival. It's very cool. It's very hip. And I got my ticket since 2020 and they haven't said shit yet. So I'm like, are they going to bring back the festivals as normal? Are they going to be seated? Like, I would love to be in the US right now to be able to see how they're managing stuff, because that's the more interesting part of it. Because there, it's sort of comparable, the whole vaccination stuff when it comes to the US and Portugal. Like, older people don't want to get vaccinated and younger people are all getting boosters and whatever they can, so they can get out of the house and go do their normal lives. So I would be very interested to know the minimal stuff, like what they need, what they ask, what are the protocols. Like, that's, I think it's the, now, right now, it's the best time to do a lounge, to sort of try to get something going.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, so truthfully, in the US, as far as protocols for these massive festivals, there's essentially none. It's wide open at this point. Okay. Which, yeah, I guess it's so individuals assuming whatever risk level that they're comfortable with and, yeah, and just going for it. But before I forget, guys, so first, Jonas, having a horn section for the live set, that's so genius. That's going to be such a phenomenal experiment. And so as we're thinking about chill beats shows or lo-fi shows, and of course, we all muddle our way around calling our community whatever our community is, so please mellow beats community, whatever you would like.
For jazz these, hop.
Jazz hop. Chill, yeah, hop. Yeah, yeah. The list my chill hop. No. But it's I'm seeing so many different potentials in different routes. And so I'll just list a few off and then let you guys kind of take it and run with it, because so the lo-fi lounge element, and then of course including ensembles of instrumentalists to help accompany the chill beats. I think there's also potential for kind of lo-fi music driving yoga retreats and meditation retreats, along with like Pauses is an artist that I talked to. I believe, I think he's from the Netherlands. Pause. I apologize if that's not where you're from, but he just got his Wim Hof certification, you know, and so he's thinking of ways to implement Wim Hof training it mixed in with chill beats. So I think there's a lot of potential in the let's just call it the health, physical health and mental health side of things. But I think there's also it may come true that, okay, we start playing some of these lo-fi, these chill hop sets, but maybe there's not quite enough energy to potentially to keep the attention of the live show. But then, of course, as soon as you throw in an entire horn section, well, now you have a band. So now you can maintain that that attention. But something that Misk Inc. is doing, he's done such a phenomenal job at blending his lo-fi chill beats with future bass and just adding a touch more energy and really bridging the gap between like heavier future bass and lo-fi and chill beats. So I think maybe out of necessity that may come about, and we don't know. It's speculation at this point. But once again, I think there's a lot of opportunities for growth. And so I know I just threw a lot at you guys, but yeah, feel free to pick something there and give me your thoughts on kind of how you see these live shows progressing.
Well, yeah, I think it depends a lot on the artist. And obviously the different artists have different talents and have different approaches to this. So I think it will depend and vary a lot. Like, obviously there is a lot of similarities between the artists in our community, but there is a lot of differences as well. So I think people will start evolving in their own directions. Like I'll do live shows with horn players, and some people will go into the more energetic future bass, and some people will do straight up meditation music. And another thing that I've actually seen and been asked is collaborations with restaurants that have music in their in the restaurants, and like making tailored music for different places like that. I've been asked to do that, and yeah, so I think it will, everyone will go in a lot of different directions, yeah, depending on their talents and their passions, of course. So, but I still think that we will all maintain our roots, our the immense support for each other. I think that's my speculative vision.
I completely agree, dude. I think that we should think of things of there must be more than one way to sort of bring value to our brand per se. So I think that above all, there's never been a bigger time, besides if we're talking like Nujabes or J Dilla, where the producer was in the center of things. Like this genre, that's it. Like you're looking at the producer, the mastering engineer, probably in most of the times, and the mixer and everything. So it's a very exciting time, although I think we're in the experimental phase, although people are trying to figure out where we can place our music. Restaurants, it's a wonderful idea. I do think I praise the person or the people who came to you, because that was one of the things I thought about. Because I don't think that right now, unless you're doing an action movie, there's not a lot of best or better genres to get on films, on Walmarts, on big stores, on everything else, like restaurants. It's also like that. There's a very big sinking when it comes to the royalty, the mechanical royalty part of this, there's a very big sync opportunity for us because we're building catalogs that goes from 30 to 60 songs or even 100 a year. So you'll be able to offer a lot of different vibes, or I don't like to say vibes, but like different scenes, and you can cater to a lot of different things you can do within the, an indie movie or whatever. And there's a lot to pick. And if you just look at a catalog from one artist, you'll be amazed. If you got it, if you got 10 people sending you a catalog, it's unbelievable. Like if you get a publisher right now, which I'm pretty sure, like I think Jonas has one. I think we got the same one, and it's wonderful. It takes time to take off, but as soon as it does, we're golden, my friend. We're golden because if we can do things by ourselves, which is the thing I love the most, because the most interesting part of all this thing that's going on, the whole music thing, it's the amount of knowledge I've been able to get in this past couple of years. It's surpassed whatever 8 years or 6 years I had in college learning a completely different subject. Like, you gotta like this a lot. Not only the music, but the other part, to be able to sort of ingest everything and not be completely crazy about it. Because it's a very hard business. It's a very cutthroat business. I do, from my personal experience, speaking before I even made music, I could compare this whole business to the fashion business, because it's everyone's trying to trip each other. Not specifically in our genre, you know, I'm speaking very globally, but it's, I think opportunities are, we have way more opportunities than we had 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So it's just a matter of time till people sort of open their eyes and understand I'm way better off working with these guys themselves than just go through a manager, an A&R, a huge label, and pay them a bunch of things to get a quarter of the work I'll be able to get from an indie artist. At least that's my point of view. And you know, Cody, I always push for the indiest possible. Whatever you can do, just do it yourself, because I believe in us. I believe in us, not me only.
Yeah. Well, what a prolific and beautiful statement. Believing in us, and of course, something that I always touch on is how unique and supportive our community truly is, especially being kind of a sub industry of the overarching industry of music business, which is of course just cutthroat and competitive, and coming from the electronic world, like, oh my goodness, that competition or the lack of trust can be exhausting. And that's something that we as producers of this genre and of this community, we do truly support each other and truly want to see each other succeed. And for me, that's like the undoubtedly the most important ethos and aspect of our community. But as any industry grows, more barriers to entry pop up, and even for me, so let's relate it to the podcast. Well, a year ago, if somebody wanted to be on the podcast, it probably would have been relatively easy for them to reach out and say, hey, I'm really interested in being on the podcast, and I probably would have just immediately made it happen. But now that there's more traction, I have more guests that have, we'll just say, quote unquote, success. We'll say analytical success. And so now I've begun to prioritize my guests, and I can't allow everyone who wants to be on the podcast to be on the podcast. Same with collaborators. I mean, in speaking for myself, a year ago or a year and a half ago, it would have been a lot easier to collaborate with me as a musician. But of course, as more of those opportunities arise, I have to begin saying no and rejecting more artists. So how can we stay true to our ethos of support and collaboration and authenticity as all of our projects begin to grow and the scene begins to grow? How do we keep that?
Yeah, I think it's a very important aspect to touch on, because from personal experience, there is, as you grow, there is obviously some artists you would rather work with than others. But for me, I've tried to maintain the same approach as I've always had. If someone reaches out to me and sends me something I like, no matter how many streams, no matter how successful, no matter who they are, if they send me something inspiring, something that I would enjoy working on, I will work on it. And obviously, I have a lot of projects going on all the time, so I can't always say yes. But I'm horrible at saying no for the most part. But because people always send so amazing things, and yeah, so I try to be very aware of that. So that everyone has the same, you know, chances. Mm-hmm. I think, which will then result in always supporting equal amounts to everyone, I think.
100%. I don't say no. I don't say no, dude. I don't say no at all. It's impossible. If I like the music, there's no reason for me to say no. Mm-hmm. I try to be as transparent as possible and say, dude, I got this, and this to do. So after that, I would love to get on this. Like, I would love to just give me some time to get stuff out of my plate and I'll start working with it. Because I remember when I first started, when I was so eager to start collaborating with everyone that I jumped ahead of everything. Like, I got the stems, I was able to get into it, like, just simply work 9 to 5 on it. I would do like, I would go until 5 in the morning or something like that. And I would be able to deliver it in like 1 day, 2 days. I realized that not only my health, I would say mental health at all, was sort of suffering with that, because I wasn't getting any sleep at all. And I felt my productivity getting very low when it comes to creativity and everything. So I had to sort of stand back and be like, okay, I need to let things breathe a bit. I need to be able to get my things organized before I even start tackling new stuff. But I'm 100% with Jonas. I don't say no if I like it. I'm a bit biased, because there's a couple of people, and both of you are great examples, that I do consider friends. And I do not only enjoy working with you guys, that I like the whole back and forth. Like, I like speaking with you guys. So there's a reason why I'm mostly working with a lot of people, because mm-hmm. they're friendly. They're here, clearly have the same objectives as me, even if they're higher or lower, we're trying to get up. So there's no reason for me to try not to invest in the friendship before even investing in the music. So I like that sort of things, dude. If I like the person, it's even a plus. Like, I love it. It's wonderful. Like, I've made more friends in this couple of years than I've done in college or something like that. I was so fucking awkward. So that's it's been wonderful too. I've never been able to meet so many people. Besides when I went to an Erasmus, when I studied abroad for 6 months, I never met so many people from all around the world, dude. It's wonderful. Fucking hell. How am I speaking with someone from Colorado and someone from Denmark right here? It's wild, man. It's wild.
it truly is. And that's definitely an aspect that sometimes I do take for granted of how special it is to be sharing conversations and creating music with so many talented artists all over the world on a daily basis, because it's just hedonic adaptation, right? We're human beings. Something's new and exciting. We get that new and exciting thing, and within 2 weeks, it's normal. And so I've definitely fallen victim to that within our scene, because Antonio, you're so right, man. Like, how phenomenal is this that we get to share these relationships and these conversations and create music? It truly is special. And kind of just going back to the topic of
we're trying to grow our projects as independent artists, but of course we are all together within this community and this scene, all striving for success. What do you all, or what do you both view as potential risks to our community moving forward?
Yeah, exactly. Dude, I think the biggest thing, and I'm just going to say it in a few words, like taking the indie out of it would probably ruin it, if I'm being honest. Like taking the power from the producers like we have right now, mm-hmm. it would completely wreck this. And I've, unfortunately, not in our genre, but in Portugal right here, I've seen that happen with another genre, with another producers, and it's very sad.
Mm.
Very sad. Of course, we're speaking about major labels. Yeah. But yeah, it's basically it. That's my view.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, we are in a situation where a lot of people are dependent on playlist support and on Spotify streams. I think most of us are getting our... the main revenue from streaming, so it's quite a big risk,
mm-hmm.
Because you don't have control of which songs are in playlists, and someone could potentially remove all your music from Spotify, and you'll be left with almost nothing. So yeah, there is a ton of risk involved with this kind of career, but yeah, but yeah, as Antonio said, it's great that we are in a position as artists, as producers, to do everything ourselves. We are our own. We produce, we mix, we master, we do our own media, social media content. We do our own promotion. We get a lot of experience that will be helpful in other endeavors as well. So I think no matter how you look at it, it's very risky when you mm-hmm. look at like from a very logical standpoint. But all the connections and all the skills we're all learning is so useful in today, I think.
Yeah, and you both brought up really great points. So I have follow-up questions for both of you. And then Antonio, with you first. So the risk of, let's just say, the risk of being infiltrated by major labels, if just assuming that major labels would be detrimental to our community, how do we prevent that from happening, especially if big money is thrown on the table, which is of course how major labels get artists to sign with them. And so before you answered that, and then Jonas, you're totally right. The power of Spotify and other streaming platforms is a gamble on our end, and we're working under the assumption that these entities will continue to push forward, even though that is out of our control. And so what you were touching on was kind of diversification of potential revenue streams. So what suggestions do you have for ways to diversify your revenue streams through the project? So whoever wants to take it first.
Okay. So I think utilizing your skills as an artist to help other producers, other aspiring artists. I've done a lot of, actually recently I've done a lot of lessons for young artists, young producers who want to learn how to make music. And if you play an instrument, you can do lessons. I'm working on a piano plugin and on a sample pack. And yeah, so all kinds of projects that all tie together with what I currently do and with my skills, but will also diversify my revenue streams a bit, hopefully. Yeah, and live shows being very, you're not always gonna get a big paycheck from a show if you're not a big artist, but yeah, I've trying to push that as well. That I'm not gonna play a 1 hour show with a 2 hour drive if I'm not getting anything. Mm-hmm. That's a principle. There are a lot of ways to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with him, especially the show part of it. If the writer is not enough, if the writer is not worth it, if you can't get at least enough to sort of compensate of course you can always adapt how we're going to do it. If you need to bring all the stuff, everything when it comes to instruments, to PA things and everything else, it's a completely different writer than whenever you just have to go with your laptop or something similar. But I agree. People need to sort of be able, we need to, as a community, set a standard for this before we even can even think about living off of live acts. And it's fucking funny that you were speaking about the plugin thing, because I was just speaking with Axion about sort of making a synth, not something plugin, like a real synth, because I have a lot of background in 3D printing and electronic. So I was thinking about doing some tests with him. And if you need a designer, dude, I'm here. But we'll speak after. I'm pretty good with graphic and product design. So if you need anything else, just we can talk about it. But it's getting back to the question you asked me, which I don't remember. you asked me about the how can we prevent the major things, the major labels.
How can we prevent infiltration from major labels? With the caveat being, if their strategy might just be pumping money into the community, which gets messy.
Yeah. If we're speaking advances, probably it comes down to the person. You know, if they're presenting you a very embellished number, and let's just keep it real as possible. If they're giving you 200K or 100K for a 5-year contract, you're not making money. You're losing money, probably. I'm not saying you're going to make it. You're going to make 200K, but you're not going to see a dime after that advance, probably for the next 5 years of your contract, because they're going to juice it up everything. And there's the best way we can do it is what Offi was saying, was trying to inform younger artists, and just information is power in this genre. Like if you can relay what you know already, what you know it's possible to do, you can sort of open the eyes of the person, people who are sort of getting into this. Because, and I'm not taking like the truth of a lot of people who have been in this business and are now signing with big labels, which is happening right now. Like there's a couple of cases of people who went to Universal, who went to Warner, who went to Sony. There's already people in our genre who are doing that. Dude, if they want to do that, it's their thing. Eventually, they're gonna get into Spotify specifically. It's a public company, boy. So the action is to the people who are in the board of the company. They have a say in everything, and soon enough, they're gonna have a say in playlists more than other people have. So it's just a matter of time. But getting back to that point again, I don't think we can even predict which streaming service is gonna be king in 2 years. So we don't need to even think about it, because now it's Spotify. In 2 or 3 years, it can be Apple, or it can be Tidal. It can be something completely different. And we as producers, as independent producers, we'll just have to adapt. Mm-hmm. Something we've been doing for a couple of years. So it's going to be a struggle, but we'll find a way. We'll definitely find a way. I'm just rambling now. Sorry, guys, if you want to just stop me. But there's a couple of Portuguese artists which have spoken to me and I've reached out, and I've not in our genre, and I've tried to do meetings with them. And that's where I got the idea that the whole business, the whole music thing, it's very cutthroat because half of the conversation was sort of bashing what I was doing. Like they just said, you got a lifespan of a year. In 6 months, you'll be broke. There is no reason for you to do this. It's dumb. Just sign with blah, 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 or sign with whatever it is. And I'm like, I'm just there, just like blank faced. Like, dude, I thought we were going out for a coffee and just speak. I'm not here. My mom already bashes me every day. I don't need you to do the same. So it's, you know, it's weird. The vision as a whole, especially in Europe, which I do think that Hoffy might find this quite similar. Like one thing, it's major labels, either it's Universal, Warner or Sony in the US. Other thing, it's major labels in Denmark, in Portugal, in Spain. They're so much smaller. The way that they can work, it's within that community, that nationality. Like they can only work within your country. And I've seen that with a lot of artists, with a lot of Portuguese artists, which are trying to get out of Portugal. And they can't do a thing because they haven't figured out that there's playlists outside of our country that can sort of bring value to them. And it's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of the right knowledge, get to the right person, and they'll be here with full force. But it's you got examples like Lo-Fi Fruits and other labels which have been doing that. And I'm pretty sure they're backed up from someone who has a lot of money in the industry. So it's a double-edged sword. Like you'll be able to keep doing your stuff, but everyone's going to try to get into this. Like everybody tries to follow the hype per se. And we're getting into that hype, that peak of hype. So it's just a matter of time. I just try to look at things with the best way possible because if we think about it too much, we'll get too depressed to even work. It's true. It's true. It's true, man.
Which I think let's just be grateful that we are able to
exactly.
sustain a career in music at this point. And whatever comes, we'll adapt and help each other out.
Yep. Well,
deal with it, dude.
Yeah. Hey, and fellas, I think that that is a perfect and inspirational way to wrap this conversation up. Thank you to both of you for being willing to hop on the podcast another time. I really enjoyed this this triple collaboration that we have going on here. So let's do it again soon.
Oh, yeah.
Just set a date and we'll be here.
Boom.
I'm sure.
All right. Let's make it happen, guys. To everybody tuning in, peace.
Peace.